Welcome to Banfield. This past weekend, more than 30 tornadoes were recorded across six states, likely setting a historic record for the longest continuous tornado in American history. Labeled the Quad State Tornado, this monster left a trail of death and destruction across Arkansas, Missouri, Tennessee, and Kentucky in just 4 hours. Additionally, several other tornadoes ripped up Illinois and Mississippi. According to Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear, his state was the hardest hit. The death toll in Kentucky alone has risen to 74, and at least 109 people are still unaccounted for. And those numbers are expected to go up. FEMA has opened 14 shelters and is providing 30,000 meals and 45,000 liters of water, as well as cots and blankets, infant toddler kits, and medical equipment. The American Red Cross has set up 8 shelters and is currently providing relief to nearly 200 people in Kentucky. News Nation has been on the ground covering this story all weekend, and we will continue to update you as we hear more, especially as survivors are found. And we are crossing our fingers. If you want to help the people devastated by these tornadoes, you can go to newsnationnow.com. There's a place you can give on the homepage. And then also you can go to redcross.org. And let me just say, donating money is the best way that you can help. Donating items often can cause additional labor and red tape for all of those emergency volunteers who are scrambling. Because the majority of the Red Cross workforce is volunteer, 90% of your money goes directly to the people in need. It's a good thing to do during this holiday season. I'm going to turn now to three different stories that all share a holiday theme, albeit for very different reasons. And we are not talking about the Christmas spirit that you hear about in Christmas carols. No, this is real world, where shoppers rushing home with their treasures means a thief grabbing what he wants and bolting for the door. For the past few days, our own Brian Enten has been covering the recent surge of smash-and-grab robberies in stores across the country. Yesterday, Brian thought he was getting a day off from the beat and doing some shopping for himself at a nearby Home Depot when he suddenly caught a man stealing a power saw. And Brian took off after the man and captured what happened next on his cell phone.
Did you just steal that? You just stole that?
Nope.
Yeah, just one turn. I am joined now by Brian Enten. Brian, I'm just watching the guy walk right out, covering his face. It's a little astounding, but it looked also like there was an accomplice there in the white car. Was that man arrested, or were either of them found?
No, not that I know of. I don't think the police were even called. I think the loss prevention team from Home Depot, and you'll see there's a guy who had a mask on with long hair. He worked for Home Depot and was sort of in plain clothes. I think they were just relieved to get that Ryobi saw back. But from what I understand, talking to people who work there, this has just become so common lately that they can't even call the police every single time. They try to recover as many of the items as they can, but most of the time, the people just take off and get away.
As I was just watching, the guy actually tried to get in the passenger door of that white truck. He'd thrown the saw in the back of it. And then we just sort of watched the guy who you were talking about. I guess he was the loss prevention officer. See, there you go. Look at him opening the door. He's opening the door. So you know he's a part of this deal. The guy driving that white truck is a part of all of this. So tell me what happened right after this moment that we're seeing the guy walk out of the garage covering his face.
Yeah, it was interesting. So he came out, the guy who took off with the saw, and he put it in the back of that pickup truck. And then when I showed up with the camera and started asking him questions, he sort of covered his face and took off. And then the guy in the pickup truck tried to make it seem like he had nothing to do with anything and was just like, oh, no, I don't know what's going on. I don't know why this thing is in the back of my pickup truck. That's when the loss prevention team showed up. They basically got it out of the back of the pickup truck, and then off they went.
Okay, so let's see that moment up. Let's pull that sound up full so we can hear what went on there.
It's in the back. Oh, he's in there. He's in there.
Yeah, wait a minute. Yep.
I told him to get that shit out of my truck. He said,
oh, you want me to get out for you?
I told him.
And there they go. Which weird. Watch this, though. This moment. He looks back and sort of thanks the guy. The loss prevention officer that we're looking at with the braids, Brian, taking the saw back to the store, was he aware that the driver was, you know, possibly involved in this? Because he sort of thanked him and said, thank you, sir.
Yeah, I think he was being sort of sarcastic. That's what I gathered from sort of being there. I think he knew. And I think, Ashley, if you can imagine what that loss prevention officer sees all day long. I mean, this is a moment that I captured just, you know, 5 minutes of that guy's day. But the sense that I got, again, was that this is just happening over and over again. So he was able to get the saw. He probably had to get back in the store to get ready for the next shoplifter.
What was the guy saying, by the way? What was that? Because we had to bleep it out because he was using profanity. But what was the driver yelling to the loss prevention officer? What was he saying?
So when I was videoing the alleged shoplifter who left with the saw, the guy kind of kept making eye contact with me in the pickup truck, and then he was sort of shouting out something like, well, he knows, kind of pointing towards me. He knows I wasn't involved. He knows. He saw it. He knows. But I really didn't really know anything. I thought it was super suspicious that the guy put the saw in the back of the pickup truck. So that's what he was kind of saying. He was trying to allude to the fact that, like, I was going to defend him or something, but I definitely wasn't.
Yeah, and it just so happened the guy that ran off covering his face, was just about to get in that passenger door and opened it. So, I'm glad this guy wasn't hurt getting the saw from the back of the, pickup, because the guy could have just taken off and hurt him. Brian, is this getting worse? It just seems like every story I see on the news these days, it's either a smash and a grab or some grab or something like this that's just so incredibly brazen they don't seem to worry about any consequences.
Yeah, I mean, this is a story that I've been researching for the last 4 days because we're doing this series on News Nation. So it was super weird that I just happened to be at Home Depot with my mom, by the way, buying a microwave when this happened. And it was sort of at the forefront of my mind anyway, because I'd been doing all these interviews on the subject. So I sort of wanted to get the video right away. But I mean, we're in a different location in Miami. This is a different store. And this is sort of just like what you see. The windows are boarded up. You can see the front door here all smashed in. A lot of these stores in South Florida have hurricane glass, so it's very, very difficult to get in. So the person who came here and tried to smash their way inside wasn't able to get inside. But sadly, in certain American cities, this is sort of becoming routine.
It's so frustrating, they're taking it all in stride as though it's just another day at the office. It's very frustrating. Brian, you're doing a great job, and I'm glad you're safe as well. Be careful when microwave shopping with your mother.
Yeah, thanks, Ashley.
All right, Brian Enten reporting for us from Miami. All right, holiday story number two now. What the holiday season is supposed to be, really. It's supposed to be about us all getting together with our families, right? Usually in a nice, warm, cozy home somewhere. Certainly not a cold, damp prison cell block. But for the 15-year-old school shooting suspect in Michigan, he and his parents are cozied up in the Oakland County Jail for the holidays. Ethan, James, Jennifer Crumbly are all in the grown-up jail together, and their advent calendar is a series of December court appearances. And lest you think the jailers will let them spend a little quality time together, nope. They are all in separate cells, unable to visit or even see each other. Meaning, a 15-year-old in adult jail cannot see his parents and has not seen his parents since the day they took off and skipped a court hearing, landing them behind bars. Instead of at his side, helping that kid deal with the colossal mess that he's in, 24 charges related to the school shooting. Ethan's probable cause hearing was held via video today, and though it was postponed until January 7th, technically, a very important ruling came down. The defense asked that the 15-year-old be moved to a juvenile facility because he could apparently overhear the adult inmates inside the jail. There's no word on what those inmates were saying or whether or not they were addressing Crumbly directly, but the judge said no, that Ethan Crumbly should stay in the adult facility because of the nature of the charges that he faces, including one count of terrorism causing death and four counts of first-degree murder. His parents, James and Jennifer face four counts each of involuntary manslaughter for allegedly supplying their son with the gun and then ignoring some very obvious signs of distress. They're both set to have their own probable cause hearing tomorrow. Ethan, he's got a next court date. It's a preliminary examination hearing scheduled for the 20th of this month, and his parents have their own similar hearing the very next day. And then, well, it's Christmas Eve and Christmas. I don't think it'll be special for them. Okay, now I'm going to take you to Christmas story number three. What should you buy for that special somebody this holiday? If you were rethinking buying a Peloton bike after last week's bombshell on the reboot of Sex and the City, fear no more and go get yourself a Peloton. Spoiler alert coming, ready? On Sex and the City. In 3, 2, 1, do this if you don't want to. Okay, here it comes. Mr. Big has come back from the dead. He came back to rescue Peloton, and he's got the star of Deadpool by his side, the one and only Ryan Reynolds. If you did not hear about this last week, Peloton, their stock just tanked. It tumbled after the fictional Mr. Big, played by actor Chris Noth, died after riding a Peloton in the first episode of the new series. The episode dropped on Thursday, and then the company's stock dropped that day too, 11%. Then the next day, it tanked another 3%. And heading into the weekend, it looked more like it was going to be the same kind of story. But then on Sunday, Ryan Reynolds, he tweeted out a hilarious Peloton ad that he speed produced on Saturday. It features Chris Noth playing Mr. Big and Jess King, the real Peloton trainer who appeared in the show as the woman named Allegra teaching the class. And it may just be the clap back of the year. We're discussing how Ryan Reynolds' latest commercial has helped save Peloton's stock price and add to his already robust media portfolio. I want to bring in Michael Schneider, Variety's deputy TV editor, and publicist Rob Shooter. He's worked on crisis PR for Diddy, Naomi Campbell, Jessica Simpson, and Jennifer Lopez. Rob's also worked with Peloton's senior vice president of global communications, so he knows a few things. He also wrote the book, The Forward Answer. Welcome to both of you. Okay, so first things first. Rob, good move or what? I mean, who saw that coming and how fast, right? Do you think it's a real hit out of the park?
Yeah, I think it's extraordinary. What they did is they changed the conversation. Peloton was in trouble. Their stock was plummeting. They had been blamed, essentially, for killing off this character that we had grown to love. And they punched back really, really quickly, but also they punched back very, very smartly. Getting Mr. Big to be part of this was just, I think, fantastic. And also, too, the little taglines that he's still alive made us all smile. And I think this is one of the best ads, may I say, that I've ever seen. I'll go that far.
I think it's one of the most creative and certainly it's a strike force creation. And actually, that's what I want to ask you about, Michael. Look, I know how things like this get produced, and they don't get produced in a day. It is really, really hard to book a big Hollywood star like Chris Noth and then take the Peloton, the Peloton trainer out of her regular Manhattan classroom on Saturdays, somehow find a setting to shoot this ad, which, by the way, looks spectacular. It does not look shoddy in the way they've shot it. And then edit the ad. I forgot the part about writing the ad and then somehow finishing it and dropping it. All of that took about, 24, 36 hours. I've never heard of anything like that, Michael.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of serendipity, and maybe it takes Deadpool to pull it off. I do think there is something to be said for the star power of Ryan Reynolds being able to pull off something like this. Obviously, he already had a relationship with Peloton, so that helped. And his company has really, really been focused on doing these kind of quick turnaround ads, very pop culture oriented, really diving into the zeitgeist. And you're right, he really hit it out of the park with this one. But it's the latest example of something that his company, Maximum Effort, has been doing a lot lately. So yeah, they pulled off quite a coup and turning this around as fast as they did.
And Rob, like, you know, as a publicist, you know the drill, right? Even Ryan Reynolds, he's a big shot. But to get all of those things together on Saturday, and I'm like, literally, they didn't even know the Peloton stock story until really Friday, right? Because Thursday's things started going south. And then, oh, God, Friday, it really went south and the media took over. So they really didn't even have, you know, four business hours to get a hold of Chris Noth and say, we need to shoot a really, really significant, complex, layered ad with you all tomorrow, and it has to drop within 12 hours of that.
It's extraordinary, although let me give you some shout-out here. You put together an amazing show every day, and you do this on a daily basis, so it can be done. I think what's significant to me here is not the fact that technically they could pull it off. Goodness knows, now with COVID, we can all pull off things that we didn't think we could do before. What really impresses me is they actually said yes to this. I have been in so many crisis meetings where it's safer to say no. We've all been in those companies. Meetings when somebody's in trouble, a brand's in trouble, and everybody hides. I'm so impressed that Peloton is that type of brand where they've decided we gotta act quick, we're gonna take a chance, and they did this. That's what's so shocking to me. Normally, it takes a board of 10 people to discuss this endlessly. That didn't happen. They said yes, and then technologically, they pulled it off.
And then a writer and a creative director and a cinematographer. I mean, if they told me this thing was done on a bunch of iPhones, I'd also hit the floor. So, Michael, I wondered if HBO had any part in this. And this is where I'm going to really sort of pull on your journalistic chops. They've been taking it on the chin, right, for the first two episodes. Like, it's just getting panned, the Sex and the City spinoff. And then the Peloton stuff was terrible. So you have two companies, HBO and Peloton, both thinking, oh, God, why is this happening? Do you think that they pulled some corporate strings to make this happen?
Well, I will say, I mean, yes, the critics haven't loved the first two episodes of the new show, but it is buzzy right now. It's what people are talking about. So to some degree, they have succeeded in getting back into the zeitgeist, as only the Sex and the City brand can. But I think you're right in that, you know, Peloton, you know, was damaged, as we saw with that stock price. And so if you're HBO and you don't want any sort of legal issue, because from what we understand, they didn't inform Peloton exactly what was going to happen with Big's death because it was a huge secret. They'll bend over backwards to make sure that maybe Chris Noth is available. Maybe we'll sort of dot the I's and cross the T's and allow something like this that normally would go through a much more rigorous process to actually happen. So, yeah, you remember a few years ago when the crockpot killed the character on This Is Us, and that led to another sort of uproar and threats of legal action, etc. So you do have to be very careful, and I think everyone on both sides wanted to make this work, which is another reason why they were able to pull this off so fast. But I also I was just going to say, you know, Ryan Reynolds is good buddies with Jimmy Kimmel. He just did a bunch of ads for Jimmy Kimmel Live in front of a studio audience last week. And we know Jimmy Kimmel also knows how to pull together something like that in 24 hours. And I think it's that very late night show comedic sort of way to just, you know, really rally the troops and pull off something like this the way they did.
It's still a huge Herculean effort. And I love you, Rob, for saying that we produce a show every day and look at we're on TV. But we tried to book Chris Noth. It didn't work. We didn't have that, the wheelbarrow full of delicious goodies, whatever it would take to get Chris Noth in 24 hours. So just quickly, I want to talk about Ryan Reynolds and his company, Maximum Effort, which is a line from Deadpool, right? Rob, he has become so much more than an actor. He's got this new business making, like, he's the creative director of this ad company, Maximum Effort. And I'm almost wondering if this is the new model of Hollywood power. You can't just be a big A-list celebrity. You got to have an aviator gin. You got to run an ad company. You have to be viral on a regular basis. Because this guy, I think it's the Canadian in him, but he's got it all.
He's got it all, hasn't he? But I think what makes this so special is that this is what he is really good at. If you're not good at this, then slap your name on a bottle of vodka or sell T-shirts or a fragrance. But he's really, really good at this. I've met him a few times. He's terribly witty. He's terribly quick. He really enjoys being behind the camera. He thinks of himself as a writer as well as an actor. And I imagine moving forward, he's going to do even more of this. I predict now that every brand in trouble out there, the first call they're going to make is to Ryan Reynolds.
Oh, and his price just went way up with this one, because I got to say, like, this was just delicioso after Friday. Delicious. I mean, poor Peloton, and now they're laughing all the way to the bank. Michael, Rob, thank you both. Really appreciate it.
Take care.
Okay, coming up, 15 years old and missing in Manhattan since Thursday. Think about your kid at 15, alone in Manhattan. This is no place for a kid, let alone a young couple who's gone off the grid. I'm going to be joined by the parents of Kaylee Catalano and Vincent Abolafia. Are they getting the help they need to find their children? That's next. It is a rite of passage for any teenager who grows up on Long Island in the shadow of the city that never sleeps. The day that their parents let them jump on the Long Island Railroad and head into New York City. It's the busiest commuter railroad in North America. About 300,000 passengers ride this thing every single day. Two of them on Thursday might have blended in pretty easily on the train. 15-year-old Vincent Abolafia and his girlfriend, Kaylee Catalano, also 15. An hour and 20 minutes later, they should have rolled up on the Big Apple. But we don't know if they did, because their moms and dads have not heard from them since. We're at day 4, and they are only 15. Anne and James Bonasia are Vincent's mother and stepdad, and Erin Catalano is Kaylee's mom. Erin, I'm going to begin with you. I understand that you're in the car. You're just driving back from New York City right now. Have you learned anything since you were in the city?
No, we have not.
What were you doing in the city today?
Searching for the kids, trying to follow any leads, look in homeless areas, looking at hostels, anywhere we can find, trying to ask people, canvass the streets.
So, Anne, anything on your end from your side? Have you heard anything from the police? Are you getting any information? What's the latest you're getting?
I spoke to a detective this morning from the 7th Precinct in Suffolk County. They had, it seemed like a false alarm in Brooklyn. We've just been very proactive ourselves, following citizen apps. Erin and I have been just going into convent houses, to just get age requirements, to see if that's a possibility, going to ACS on First Avenue, trying to be very proactive with other hostels in the area, in the city, just to get as much information as we can. It is confirmed that they did they did arrive in Penn Station Thursday night. They had a sighting at Bubba Gump restaurant in Times Square. It was a confirmed sighting that was very, very accurate. So they were in the city Thursday. They did arrive in Penn Station Thursday. I do feel they are still in the city. The school has been very proactive with pinning my son's Chromebook that he has on him. It is confirmed that he does, that he has it on him. It's not in his school locker. It's not at home. There were pin sightings that we were trying to get a radius where they would be. But they definitely were here Thursday night. They definitely walked into Bubba Gump. That is the only confirmed sighting that we have. We do have on Citizen app, which is an app that, missing persons, they locate, and people just constantly are commenting that they saw them. So they did get a lot this afternoon. That's why Erin and I fled to the city, because they got a lot of comments that they were seen primarily in the Times Square area. And there was quite a few of them. Then there were some that were by the Brooklyn Bridge. So me and her mom are just being proactive. You stay, you kind of cover that. I'll cover over here. We're texting just to kind of really eliminate all options. So now we were just at a convent house on 10th Avenue. I was at the ACS Children's Center, just getting information as to who could stay there. Is it a possibility? What would happen if a child went to these facilities? Would they accept them in? And just getting information about these homeless shelters. Where would they go being 15 to some of these homeless shelters that possibly could be 18 and over, these hostels that are downtown? So we're just, have an investigator on the case as well. She is doing a lot of proactive work today to help us. It's a lot of...
let me ask you, Aaron, I want to get Aaron to jump in on this as well. From what I understand, the kids left their cell phones at home, yes, which is really weird for a teenager. They are never without their cell phones. So that makes me think they didn't want you tracking them, which makes, I think, maybe the police think the kids are runaways. And I'm wondering if you're getting help from the police, because they're 15, whether they ran away or whether they're in trouble, they're kids. Are you getting help from the police to find them?
As soon as the news got involved, the police are now tracking the pings on the iPad. Until that point, we were really manning that and trying to, anytime anything showed up, grabbing a crowd and canvassing all the streets in the areas. We've been in subway stations. I was in the subway stations today, headed over to Brooklyn just to rule that out. Different parks, homeless areas that people hang out in, Columbus Park, anywhere that anybody could think of. Asking people where we could rent cheap rooms, calling places saying, I want to rent rooms, to see if they're in rooms, asking stores if they've seen these kids.
And I'm just getting, we're just seeing some pictures, you know, of Kaylee. She's on the cheer squad. Here she is doing some practicing. I mean, these look like good kids who were, you know, getting good grades and they're involved in school. Was there anything, Anne, before the kids left to go to New York, like any arguments? Was there any, I want to see my boyfriend, I want to see my girlfriend, and the parents are saying, no, you're not allowed? Like, were they frustrated they couldn't see each other? Was there some catalyst to them just vanishing like that?
Absolutely not. The Sunday prior, I went with my husband, my two younger daughters, Vinny's sisters, and Vinny and Kaylee. His birthday was last Monday, December 6th. We went December 5th, the day before, all to the city. We went to, you know, Carmine, saw the Rockettes. We had they went ice skating by the tree at Rockefeller Center. It was beautiful. They had such a great experience. Like, it was just a very wonderful traditional Christmas tradition in New York City that they had. And then from Tuesday, apparently we uncovered that this was being planned since December 7th in the evening, which was Tuesday night. I can't imagine. I spoke to Kaylee on his birthday, for thanking me so much, sending her the pictures that I took from my phone of them on that Sunday. We were just in contact. I said, of course, you're welcome. I hope you had such a great time. So there was nothing there. My son was just at home. We were traditionally, we're very big with Christmas and all the traditions of Christmas movies. So we were anticipating Christmas pictures next Sunday. He's plays the saxophone in his high school band. The concert was this Thursday. It was just, we were in our home. We were just planning and looking forward to our Christmas traditions in our home. His older brother is an Army veteran, and this is the first time that he is home for the holidays. So our home was really filled with a lot of love and a lot of excitement with the anticipation of that. So I'm really was just very caught off guard that.
Aaron, let me jump in and just ask. The word from authorities is that they think there's $1,200 that they have between them in cash. Where did that come from, Aaron? Where do you think you have an idea that they have $1,200?
Kaylee had found money in my safe and accessed my safe and took the money.
So that's not going to get you far in Manhattan. Do you guys think, and I'll get you to answer, and I think James is with you. He's not on camera, but if he wants to answer, you can show his image. Do you think that they are just being naughty and that they're going to come back? Or do you think some sort of foul play has happened? I mean, James and Anne, you can both answer that.
No, I mean, I really don't suspect any type of foul play. I mean, they're just two teenagers that are drunk in love, and this is an escapade that we believe that they've gone on. We just hope that they, once they run out of money, you know, they wisen up, for lack of a better term, and come home to their family who really wants them home.
Yeah, and if that happens, I know you'll be so relieved, right? You'll be so relieved, but boy, are they in for some consequences if that's the case. Well, listen, I'd love you to keep in touch with us and tell us what's happening. And when you get new leads, let us know. In the meantime, I'm going to tell our audience, if anybody has information as to where Kaylee or Vincent might be, it's easy. You can call 911 anywhere in the country and tell them you're talking about that Long Island pair of kids, or you can call 1-800-THE-LOST. 1-800-THE-LOST. You can't forget that. It's the National Center for Missing and Exploited Kids. They're like the clearinghouse for missing children, and that will hopefully provide a few more leads for all of you. Aaron and Ann and James, thank you for being with me, and good luck to you, and keep us posted, okay?
Thank you for helping.
All right. Gosh, I hope that gets resolved certainly before the holidays. Okay, so coming up, how do the police make a decision in a missing person case, whether it's a missing person or a runaway? And then what factors do they weigh? And how do they decide when to assign the manpower to a case, especially when it's kiddos? Back after this. Are they runaways or are they missing? Kaylee Catalano and Vincent Abolafia, both just 15 years old, disappeared together on Thursday afternoon, supposedly on their way to New York City on the Long Island Railway. Joining me now is Gil Alba. He is a former top-ranked police detective with the NYPD, just so happens now to be a private investigator who helps families find missing people. So, Gil, you are perfect for this. You heard what the parents of these two kids said in the segment right beforehand. Apparently, the news that's being made is that they took the $1,200 out of Kaylee's mom's safe, and that there was a confirmed sighting of them in Bubba Gump Shrimp. That's in Times Square. It's a pretty touristy area, very, very populated. So it does sound like there's no foul play here. Even the stepdad felt that way. But they're still 15 years old. Shouldn't the full force of the law be trying to find these kids 4 days now in the city of Manhattan?
Well, there's a difference when somebody's missing and you know that something happened to them, or runaway. So there's a little less that the police would probably do with this and maybe hesitate a little bit with helping. So families really get frustrated with this. And I see the mothers are out there and the families are out there. That's what they should be doing, is going out and doing this themselves and going out there, giving the flyers out and everything else. And before I say anything about the police, I would say to go to Penn Station and get the pictures of when they got off the train and see if they met anybody and follow them wherever the exit they went, maybe follow a couple of cameras where they went, and give those flyers out to all the police officers and that are out in the street and that you see. And they're doing everything that they could, and they got an investigator helping them out, which is great. So you do get frustrated with the police. They're looking for tips, and I'm going to just tell you how this tip is going to come in. Somebody's going to see them someplace, call the police, and the police are just going to hold them and call the parents and say, listen, we have your kids. So that either that or they're going to call the parents up. I don't really think it's going to be that much longer, even if it's a few more days. And I don't really see them being in any danger at this particular point. Getting a hotel room or something at that age is kind of weird, you know, for anybody to take them in. So I guess they're a little suspicious. But, you know, you could just hang out in Grand Central or Penn Station. So giving those flyers out and just seeing if they come in, check both of those places where they can just sleep for the night, places like that. And I think the parents have to keep doing that so they can't get frustrated. And
yeah, so
they got to do
they
all they can.
They only have $1,200, right? Which, by the way, that's a lot of money, but it is not very much money in New York City, where a cab is going to run you $20 every time you get in and out, and a hotel is going to be at the very minimum $200 or $250 a night for a really sort of a divey place. So if they are sleeping, say, on the floor of Grand Central or Penn Station or some of the subway stations, the police patrol those regularly, right? And I would assume, since there's two 15-year-olds on the loose for 4 days, there's an APB that all cops know oh, there's two teenagers. They're probably those two from Long Island. Or am I wrong?
I don't know about all cops knowing that at this particular time. That's why you give those flyers out to everybody. But you're right about being in Penn Station for those two sitting there. The police, that's why you give the flyers to the police to make sure they're looking for them. So you want all the police to look for them. Now, it's not like it's an APB that every officer has their picture with them and everybody's looking for them. I doubt if that's happening. But it should be. Now that it's in the papers and it was in the Post, which is a good place to put that, more people would see that. The more publicity you get out of this, the better it is to get them back. And it's really up to the parents to keep fighting and not get let's say, with the police, not get angry with the police and use them and ask them for help. But they still have to go in and do the work and keep searching, sending out those flyers, keep going down Times Square. I still think they're in the city someplace. And, you know, I think they're going to come back safe. So, I mean, that's a good thing, praying for the family. I know they want them to come back safe. I know they love their kids. So I hope they do, and I'm pretty sure they're going to come back safe. I don't say that for all the other cases I work with, because then they're really not runaways. They're missing with something drastically happened to them. So, you know, really, I give credit to the family for going out there and not quitting.
Boy, are they ever. Okay, let's just put their pictures up again. And I just want to remind people that if you spot these two, 911, no matter where you are, and also 1-800-THE-LOST, 1-800-THE-LOST. Kaylee and Vincent are 15 years old. They're not big. I mean, they're, you know, like between 5 and 5'5". They're not big kids. They're young. They're small. They're 15 years old. They're still children. And their parents want them back very much. Gil Elba, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Appreciate you being
good
with
luck
us.
With everybody. I think it's going to come out. Thanks. I think it's going to go out good for the family. Yeah. So thank you.
All right. Thank you, Gil. Okay. This next story, boy, it takes a particularly sick heart to do what was done in Parsons, Kansas last week, especially since it is the Christmas season. But be forewarned, this is a difficult story coming up. We're right back. It is the season to love thy neighbor, right? But in Parsons, Kansas, there is a neighbor so despicable there are no words. Let me explain. One of their officers got a new canine puppy named Ranger. There he is. Super cute. 3-month-old German Shepherd puppy. Ranger was in training to be a big dog officer, and naturally, like any puppy, Ranger got the free range in the backyard for both business and for play. But some neighbor from somewhere in Parsons stole Ranger from that yard around 7 a.m. And as if that weren't bad enough, several hours later, that person returned Ranger in pieces to that officer's backyard. They had severed the puppy's head. And this is not the first attack on a dog in that neighborhood. Three different dogs have been targeted since March. Two other dogs were shot. One died. One survived. The police chief says that this latest attack, the attack on Ranger, the police puppy, was a targeted attack because Ranger belonged to a police officer. He added, the level of cowardice that would lead someone to kill a little puppy named Ranger is astonishing. He went on to say, actually his deputy went on to say, our officers are attacked and hit and kicked and bit and scratched and called every name in the book and even spit on as part of our job. But this kind of senseless attack on a puppy at the home of an officer can't be tolerated. We just can't allow this to happen as a community. And folks, he's right. We can't. For anyone seeking revenge on a police officer for what you think is a societal problem, but then picking, you know, just any officer, even a tiny little puppy who's an officer in training, about an eighth of your size, defenseless, take a good long look at yourself, because it is crystal clear what a big part of the problem is, and it is you. You're either a serial killer in training or a very disturbed political activist. And either way, most people will just hope that you spend Christmas in jail. And I think that's really something we can all agree on.